This is CSW's Free to Believe podcast. Christian Solidarity Worldwide stands with those facing injustice because of their religion or belief and advocates to defend, protect, and restore religious freedom worldwide. As the world tackles ever-worsening inequalities and rights violations, CSW's advocacy for the right to religious freedom is needed now more than ever. I'm Darren Adwell-Palker, a pastor and president of CSW USA. And with me today is Pablo Vargas. Pablo is the director of CSW in Mexico. He is a lawyer in constitutional law and lives in Mexico City. So Pablo, welcome and thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Darren. Thank you everyone for the invitation.
Yeah, so Pablo, earlier this year, I was actually with you in Mexico and learned a lot about the issues that Mexico is facing in the arena of issues of freedom of religion or belief. And a lot of people that we talked with there in Mexico didn't really think that it was an issue. I certainly didn't have a very clear concept going into Mexico, what the issues were that people were facing. So can you give us an overview of where the issues and challenges are in Mexico as it relates to FORB?
Yeah. Thank you for this time. And actually, I think that it's taken me a while to understand, because this is not a subject that we talk like in a legal terms. And it's actually not a subject that we talk in the church. Because when we talk about persecution, we just think about the Middle East or China or Asia. And so, or we think about when the persecution in Mexico, like long time ago, like the last century, or you know, in the 19th, or I don't know. We think that it's very far away from us. So, but in the reality, it's something that is real, and it's something that sadly is cultural, and is in a lot of people in Mexico suffering because of this. And we have to talk about two different concepts in this issue. The first, like in the legal terms of the Constitution, we have this protection. We have recognized this protection for belief. And so, but in the practical, even if we have a law for reglament the freedom of belief, the beliefs of the people and the churches and the religious associations, and we're still getting like a big issue. And the reason it's because the situation of the lack of freedom of religion or belief is something cultural. And the reason that is this happening in this way is because the situation, they are very common in the countryside, especially in indigenous communities. They have this system that they call uses and customs, when the community and one assembly, they decide the day by day of the people that live in there. And so they have a community land, they have like community work, but something that it's add to all this like day by day is the beliefs. In this case, mostly everyone, they are Catholics, but their own perspective and their own version. Because if you compare to the state of Jalisco and the state of Oaxaca and Chiapas in the indigenous communities, you can find actually that it seems that they are similar, but they are not the same, because they adapt to their own culture, all the beliefs that there is, seems that is the same, but it's not. And so this is why we can see tradition in Jalisco that they use like the cactus hallucinogenous to contact with the spirit of the Mother Earth. And for the other side, we see in Chiapas with the people that they think that they take Coca-Cola or take like a posh that connected with the spiritual atmosphere. And so that is how different it is in the indigenous communities. And so, but what is happening in the practical is like they have minorities. Mostly all of them, they are Christians. Some of them, they start to believe something different, but especially they start to live in something in some different ways than the others. And so this is when the problem starts, because they say like, I have now my own church, or now I'm my membership in another church. But the community, they don't accept this. They don't know how to handle any other minority. And they think that the other like religions, they're gonna like destroy the unity and the community. And this is why they start to be against this. And so the reality is that in the community, they are just very close. Like they are just family members. And so this is why the persecution start for other member of the family. And so this is why it's very complicated.
Yeah, so just to summarize what I'm hearing you say, and from my experience there, it sounds like there's this tension that's inherent within the Mexican system. And on one hand, you have in the Constitution the freedom of religion or belief for people to express themselves and to practice whatever religion they want. But on the other hand, especially in the indigenous communities, you mentioned something called uses and customs, which is protections within the Constitution for indigenous communities to practice their way of life and their religion as they've had it. So on face value, you say that's great. They provide for indigenous communities to not be interfered with from the outside, and they get to practice whatever they want. The challenge becomes when people within those communities decide to practice a different religion or belief as the majority in that area. And then that community can often apply penalties, can sometimes put people in jail, can exclude people, can expel people from the community, right? So talk a little bit about that tension between the what the Constitution says in the practice, but then, as you were mentioning, you have then the local expression of this in the community with the indigenous communities as they practice their belief, but then often feel maybe threatened by groups or individuals or families choosing a different expression of faith or religion.
Yes. I think that it will start like with the law, the international law that the Mexican Constitution recognized. And so we have the 18 article of the Human Rights Declaration. In Mexico, we have the Article 24, where they recognize the freedom to believe. And we have the law to religious association when they clarify that it's about to what I believe and what I do with my beliefs. So, and what the government protects, and he protects both the government. In theory, he have to protect your right to believe or not believe, to change your belief, and to practice whatever you want. And I think the key is that, because in the practical, this law, it's specifically say the government is going to protect to don't be forced, or don't nobody can force to you for any reason to practice something that you don't want. And I think that in the communities, they don't understand this, or they've been like oblivious about the situation, because in some of them they say, you know, we believe that you can believe another thing, so it's possible that you believe in other things, but you still have to practice or faith or culture or tradition. One of example of that, and I think that it's going to clarify, is going to be what it was happening in Hidalgo, in La Mesa Limantitla, in a situation that a lot of pressure and coaction for a couple families. And 15 there, they've been forced to sign an agreement to deny their own faith. And so, but in the practical, what does that mean for the community? So one of that examples is like everyone that belong to the community, everyone that have a community land or is like the owner of what the community land, they are enforced to put something practical for the community, like a clean the school, clean the streets, cut the grass. But their part of them is included to be like the priest of the Catholic Church. Is include to ring the bells every Sunday, and it's include to do this like pilgrim walk every year with the saint, charging the saint. So if you own a land in the community, you have to hold and charge this saint from the other community to your own community. And so, and they have this conversation, and after to a long process of conciliation, and they say, Yeah, we respect your beliefs, but you still have to hold the same from this community to other. And they say, but we don't believe in that. This is, we say that we don't, we can keep participating in this. And they say, well, it's no matter you are part of the community and you still have to go and you still have to do it. And so it's very hard for them to find out the difference between a religious practice, the culture, the tradition, and the respect of the beliefs of the people.
So in this case in Hidalgo, as you were mentioning, it seems that about 150 members of the community were expelled out of their community, and there was this period where it looked like, there was advocacy for them to come back into their community. Can you let us know sort of the status of that situation now?
Yes, actually, it's like this story that I was telling you is in the same area. They call La Huasteca Hidalguense, and it's an area with a background to indigenous background, where they are coming from the Nahuatl. They speak Nahuatl, and they share culture and religions, all around that area. And in this same area, in the municipality of Huejutla, we have two small communities that is called Guamila and Rancho Nuevo. And so 15 years ago, a couple of families in the community, they changed religion. And so they changed to be a Christians. And step by step, they start to grow this community. And that it was a big problem for the community, because lots of people, they start to say, you know, I can't keep participating in these parties and keep participate in this work in the Catholic Church. And that create a lot of tension that start with traits and violence and attacks. And so that it was growing and back and forth in different moments until during this year. And then in April, they've been expelled from the community, and they spend like around 2 to 5 months in a like gym from the community. And it was very, very hard. And I think that at the moment, they are still without come back to their own community, because the situation, it's very simple, but it's hard to understand for the people that they are not belong to a community, or they don't understand the system. Because sadly, like you mentioned, even if they already signed an agreement, when they promise peace, when they promise like a peaceful come back for the families, they're still not possible to be executed, because the knowledge or the mindset for the community is like, yeah, I'm command here in my community, and it's no matter what other says, I'm gonna still command my community. And if we have this agreement, it's fine. But here, if you want to keep living here in this community, if you want to keep getting the rights to be in the community, you still have to obey to me 100%. And that is include to participate in whatever that I decide that you have to, no matter the agreement, no matter the human rights, no matter the state law, no matter the constitutional law. And that is something that is very hard. And I think that is the main problem in this situation, because in the practical way, even if the government or the state government and the federal government, they try to get an agreement, the community is still stubborn and to don't allow the people to come back until they accept their own terms.
And that reminds me of a story of people that we met in Oaxaca who had been expelled from their community and fought all the way up to the Mexican Supreme Court. I think it was something like a 3-year battle in the courts, and the courts mandated that they were allowed to return to their community, and they were brought in by a police escort and were told that, yes, you're allowed to stay here. But within a few months, new issues came up and they were expelled again. And so at that point, they said, even with the protection of the court and the protection of the police, the community still had the ability to put enough pressure on them so that it made it difficult, or if not impossible, for them to stay. And that story really impacted me, because there was a case where the advocacy went all the way up to the highest court in the land, and yet within the community, they were still not given the freedom to be there and to worship according to their conscience, though it was different from the rest of the community. And so, you know, how does that work? I mean, in you specifically, the work that you're doing with CSW, talk to us about how does the mindset change, and what are you doing to help change the mindset? What is CSW doing in communities? Because it seems to me that it's not just the legal side of things, although we can have that fight and we need to, but if mindset is not going to change, I don't know how we can make any progress.
Yeah, actually, when we start to research and we start to document these cases, we find out that one of that sad stories, and this is in the practical way, not very much people going to the police or going to the courts to fight for this, because they understand that in the end, the assembly is how they call, they decide everything. They don't care any other law. And it's a very sad situation because they waiting during 3 years to the end of the process and to be executed the process. And before that amount, they were expelled again. And actually, this is normally the consequence of every family or community or church, because like what I'm saying at the beginning, because they are families. And so they say, I don't want to be in trouble, or I don't want to fight for this. And so yes, I'm going to expel myself, or just I'm going to accept whatever the people told me, because in the end they say, if you don't like what we're asking to you here, just go. So just get out of here. And this is what normally people do. And it's so big, the situation. The Mexican government, they didn't understand that it was a big problem. But during the 2017 until 2020, they doing an investigation about the discrimination, in general discrimination. They don't like being, they never were specific about the religious discrimination, but they find out that from the 20 to 40% of the people that belong to a minority, they feel discriminated. And so, and that is around to more than 3-4 million of people. And so that is a really, really big problem. And so when we go to the government offices, we say, it is so big problem, why you don't do nothing, why you don't do something. And so, and they say, it's because we don't have any demand. Nobody came to ask for help. And we say, yeah, but you have a real problem here. And the reason is because the people, they don't want to be in trouble, and they don't have enough research, because other situation that is happening this indigenous communities, they already live in poverty. And so to have the opportunity to be listened, have the opportunity to sometimes to represent them, and instead to have enough food to eat, so they don't want to use their money for that.
They're just trying to survive.
Yes. So they don't want to be in trouble in that way. Mm. And so, and the other, the third, and actually it would be that interesting that what we can do it, and the, what we see that we can start to work is like, if it's the victims and if it's the churches that don't know about this, or they don't understand about this. And so that is the same situation for the government authorities or the prosecutor office and the court, that they don't understand actually what's happening in this situation. And so when some of the victims, they go to the human rights office, or they go to the prosecutor office, and they say, you know, this has happened to me. And they say like, oh yeah, just come back and be obedient of the community, and this is when the problems is going to stop. And so, and sadly, this is another problem. So because you re-victimize to the people that they already been struggling a lot. And so, and this is when the people say, oh no, I'm not going to do nothing. No, I'm not going to do any more of that. I'm done with this. And nobody knows what it was happening. And so this is why CSW, we find that part of the first step to find a solution of this problem is to train the authorities, the government authorities that they are involved, like in a first contact of the authorities, the comisariados, or the municipalities, authorities that they are involved in all this decision. And they can understand about the human rights, but especially about the freedom of religion of belief, because this is not a right that is belong to the Christians. It's a right that belongs to everyone. And when we protect the right to one person, we protect the right to everyone. And so this is why, like, we now start to see that this is part of the key to find a solution.
When I was there, that was the loudest and clearest aspect that I kept hearing from government officials, from church leaders, from people in the communities, training. We need training. We need awareness. We need practical help for communities of how to do this. And even the churches themselves to find creative ways to be who they are, to maintain their identity, but also to find creative ways to demonstrate to the community that they can serve and be a productive part rather than just having a separatist mindset where, you know, we're against everything in the community. And so talk to us about the importance of training. I know this year we did sort of a special campaign to help raise funds specifically for Oaxaca. And as we met there with other pastors and leaders from other segments in Mexico, there's a real interest that I'm seeing in the churches to champion this cause, to provide for and to empower. But I think CSW seems like they're in a very unique role to be able to provide this training. It seems like the government is asking for the training. They just can't provide the funding for it to happen. But talk to us about the training. Why does it matter? What issues do you cover and discuss, and how does that help the communities?
Yes, that is something that we find out that is very important to start to make the first step to the solution. And so from last year and this, we start to a campaign to train journalists, because it was very hard to the people to communicate what it was happening, even if we see a lot of situations, but they never were in social media, they never were in a like a formal journal. And we start to train them and make awareness.
On that piece on journalists, isn't it true that being a journalist in Mexico is one of the most dangerous professions? They tend to get targeted, unfortunately. Am I correct in that assessment? I know that that can be when they start to publish issues spotlighting some of the challenges, maybe particularly around issues of narco-trafficking, but it's my understanding that that's quite a dangerous profession there.
Yeah, it is. This, especially when you talk about subjects that they are very, how can I say, very dangerous. And so, because the influence of the narco in Mexico is very big, and so they start to trade the people. They start to, attack to others that they don't like what they say, or they don't like the way that they say. And so, yeah, it is something that is real. And so, and this is why we like get a couple of meetings with these journalists, and we make awareness about this subject, and we tell the stories. And so I would say, like, you can make a difference, the story of these families, of these communities, if you investigate. It's not just about to believe what we say or to publish all the documents or the that we have. It's like, please be interesting. And so, because another problem that we find out that the government, they just dismiss the situation and they say it's a family problem, it's a land problem, it's not a religious problem. And so, but in the practical, it is. So why this Christian, why specifically this person they treat in this way? It's because they don't believe the same. And so, and I think that it's getting a really good time now, after to talk with a couple journalists. They start to be interested to know more about this, and they've been very helpful in a couple cases in Chiapas, and now in Hidalgo and in Oaxaca. So when they start to understand about the situation and start to put in the light, to put like under the table the subject, because this is actually a real purpose, that the people start to be interesting in this. Because it's not really hard to find out like another problems. And so I get in a conversations, and even here in Mexico City, we are like a city and we don't have that kind of problems. And In some of the communities, we're still getting that problems when the families, they are forced to give donations to the parties of the Catholic Church. If not, they're gonna have suspension or of rights of whether or problems with the leadership. So some people, they just give it to them even if they don't agree with that or they don't believe in that. And so, and I'm talking about here in the city.
So you train journalists. What else does the training look like? You go into the communities, and what does that look like for the churches or the community leaders, the religious groups, maybe the government officials?
Yes. And so we find these three areas. So one is the government, other is the churches, and other is the victims, to teach them and to help them to understand what is the problem, what is their position, and the church to make awareness about the situation, and they can be interested in the subject and not just spiritualize the situation. Because yes, if the people that is Christian, they understand that if we have persecution, is because we start to make a difference in the area where we are. And so, but that is not means that everything is gonna done there. So we believe in to in the authorities and in the law, and this is part of the work that we're doing. But and now that we want to focus to, and I think that is gonna be a big step, is to make awareness in the community leaders and the government officials about this subject, and they can manage the language, they can understand the difference between intolerance, discrimination, persecution, and they can understand about human rights, and they can make better their work. And when this situation happen, they can understand that it's not a battle between Christian and Catholics, or it's not a battle between the government and the community. No, we are just enforce the attitude to respect the human rights of everyone. So, and that is not matter if they are Catholic, Christian, Jehovah's Witnesses, or wherever the people decide in their own community and in their own freedom. So this is why we believe in this, and we start to do it this year. We make some tests, and now we want to do one officially in the next month in December, with some officials of the Oaxaca government. But we have already other dates for the next year in January to start in Hidalgo and Michoacán, so where they have a big amount of indigenous communities and when they have some problems with this kind of issues.
I love how you can come in when there are situations and advocate and defend those who have been persecuted, who have been expelled. But more importantly, this idea of training is prevention. It's changing the mindset. It's changing ideas in the community with the government officials. I love how you're training journalists because then the word gets out even more and it puts that pressure on it. So Pablo, you know, when I was there, it just struck me how important your role is in Mexico as a connector, as a lawyer yourself, but as an advocate for the human right of freedom of religion. And I want to say thank you for the work that you're doing there. It matters. It's making a difference. You're a networker, you're connecting churches and groups. And CSW is not a large organization in Mexico, but you are making a difference there. And I was able to see that firsthand. And I want our listeners to understand the difference it makes by having someone like you standing for the freedom of religion on behalf of those who, as you mentioned, might be experiencing extreme poverty, just life challenges in general, and on top of that, being pushed out or persecuted in their own community. So thank you for the work that you're doing. And for those listening, to understand that the work that we get to do together, to stand in this financially, to stand in this prayerfully, to stand in this relationally, it matters. And it feels like an uphill battle at times, but it's certainly one worth fighting for because we're talking about lives. And again, in this situation of Hidalgo, I mean, 150 people, that's a significant number of people that are facing not being able to go back to their communities where they grew up, and maybe their ancestors going back for generations are from that. And so, again, thank you. Thank you for the work that you do.
Yeah, no, yeah. We are really thankful for the people that supporting to us to be here, because we depend of churches and partnership and sponsors, and we really believe in the work that the organization doing here in Mexico now, especially that we understand the situation and we understand the big problem that we have here. And so, in simple words, we start to give you awareness, and we start to give understanding to the people about the situation. And one of that examples is the situation and with a couple of religious affairs officers in the States. I have the opportunity to meet them when they take the position 1 year or 2 years ago. And I present to myself, and I present the project and the documentation that we're doing in 2021 of the women's. And they say, "Oh, thank you, but I think everything is fine in Mexico." And a couple of months later, they say, "Okay, I really need help, because it seems that everything is fine, but it's not. So I have here a lot of cases and very violent people." And so, and they are very thankful about the work and the investigation and the position that we have in this role here in Mexico. And at the same time, like you say, we help to other ministries, and we help to other churches to find the way to be more efficient, to bring help to people that they really need. Because, like you say, it's people that they already live in poverty, or they already live with a lot of needs. And put on top of this, the discrimination of their own community or their own family, and the vulnerability to leave their community, their land, their everything. So that is very, very hard for them. And in this case of Hidalgo is one of that example at the moment, because it was very, very hard to them to keep living in this auditorium without privacy, without nothing. So they decide to move to another land that someone borrowed to them with the possibility to buy in some point in the state of Veracruz. And at the moment they live in a tent. And
Wow.
so, and they live in a very, like, a tough weather. And so that area in the hot weather, they achieve more than 50 degrees Celsius. And now the winter time, it's going to be very humid and cold. And they just, it's very incredible, because I know that we already talk about the social, the cultural, and the legal situation, but it's very incredible, because in some point they could decide, or they can say, like, that's too much for me. I want to come back to my community. I want to do whatever they ask me to do, and I'm not going to be in this awkward position to myself and for my family. I don't have to living in this because of my faith." But they believe that is worth it, and they believe that their God is worth it. And it is something very amazing to see their faith be the strongest faith that they have. And because normally everyone here in Mexico, they have the opportunity to renounce their faith, or to keep follow the tradition, the religion, and don't have any problem. But a lot of them, they decide to be in trouble because of their beliefs. And they say, "If God doing everything for me, if God changed my heart, changed my life, help me with my alcoholism, help me with my addiction, help me to be a better man, or help me to be a better woman, I can't disappoint him. I can't do it." And this is very incredible. And so, because I don't know what I would do in their position, but they believe that that is worth it. And it's very special to know their cases and to put a different standard of faith in wherever we do.
Truly is an inspiration to think about people who are living in tents in extreme weather, outside, expelled from their communities, and how, on some level, simple it would be to just make a confession that says, okay, like you said, to go back on that. So, what an inspiration for us and the need for us to stand with them in this time. So, Pablo, as we close out here, would you lead us in prayer for those in Mexico that are experiencing this kind of persecution and violation of their rights, their human rights, their constitutional rights? And may we join in that. And for those that would like to learn more, in our quarterly prayer diaries, we have updates. Each week we give an area of the world to pray for. In this current edition of our prayer diary, there's updates about Mexico. And so just a way for us to stand together in this fight for freedom. But we thank you again for your work, and keep us posted so that we can continue to communicate that to others as well. But as we close, love for you to pray for the communities in Mexico that are experiencing these kinds of violations, for God to strengthen them, for the training to be effective, and for mindsets to be changed.
Yes, yes, of course. Okay, Lord, we are here talking about a situation that is quite hard to understand for the people that is involved in the government, for the churches, and we don't understand completely the whole problem. But we believe that what your word says about if because you have persecution, because you're being persecuted, and because you make a big difference. And this is the same way that these families and these communities and these small churches, they make a big difference in the middle of their communities, that they are involved in witchcraft, addictions, and violence, and lack of respect of the women, and kids, and children. Lord, just we put everything in your hands. We could see that the statistics, they are very big, and we can see that it's very hard, and we don't really know exactly what is going to be the ultimate solution. But just we want to do what your word says, that to cry with the people that is crying, to be just one heart with them, to put in our prayers, to put in our hearts, because we know that this is not just about to communities. It's because something spiritual that is in the middle of all these communities, that you want to bring hope, you want to bring something special for them, and it's lots of people that they don't want to. And so this is what we want to pray for, a breakthrough spiritually and in the communities. And we ask too that you can lead into us to make our part in all the situation in Mexico. Maybe we have families, we know people that we can start to pray specifically. And but we put in your hands the families and Rancho Nova and Coahuila, the people in San Juan La Lana and Oaxaca, and they see how the church being born. And in other cases that they're being affected because of the persecution, but at the same for the violence. And we pray that you can make a strong their feet, and they can trust in you and all the things that it seems that is impossible. And thank you for CSW, for the tool and the instrument to make an awareness of this. And thank you too for everyone that supports and sponsors the work that we're doing. And thank you too for the people that are going to listen to this podcast. We pray and we hope that they can start to join us in this pray for all the families that they have this problem in Mexico. And thank you. We put this in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Pablo. Gracias por tu trabajo en México. Lo que estás haciendo y estamos contigo en esto. Thanks for your work in Mexico, and we're with you in this. Bendiciones, hermano.
Yeah, no. Thank you too. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, man. Our prayers are with you. Thanks for joining us today. We invite you to stand with us on behalf of those facing injustice because of their religion or belief. Go to our website, cswusa.org, to learn how you can make a difference for those suffering for their faith. Your voice matters. Use it.